Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Pretty good, thanks. I've just been watching a bit of the County live stream today, watching Lancs, which has been good. Been good to have a bit of cricket back, just obviously a friendly against Essex, but we're actually doing quite well, which is really good to see. We bowled Essex out. I think they ended the day, it was just 90 overs, and I think they ended day one on 125 for 13 wickets. They lost at the end of the day, so that was good. Something around along those lines. And Saqib Mahmood got cooked out twice in a day, which was even better. So, yeah, and then, to be honest, Lancs are doing class today, considering it's a pre-season friendly. And they've not played cricket for goodness knows how long. It's all going pretty well, so I've just been enjoying watching that.
Yeah, same here as well. And to be fair to all of the counties, I've tuned into Lancs' one as well, of course, alongside Warwickshire's. We didn't do as well, I'm going to be honest. We went wicketless in our first session against Durham. But the streaming quality has been absolutely fantastic. I must admit, in comparison to previous seasons, I think we're in for some very, very good quality live streams heading into the County Championship this season. But yeah, Joe, to be honest, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, mate. Of course, got a nice busy podcast coming up as well. So nice to see that you're in a good mood as a result of Lancs. But also joining us here on the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode is Sussex County Cricket Club's analyst, Luke Dunning. So Luke, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Oh yeah, it's been good. We're in the middle of a kind of day off from our training schedule, so good to get some time away before we start pre-season games next week. Got two-day games against Surrey and Hampshire coming up, so local derbies as well. And then obviously we start the season against Joe's Lancashire, so I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
We will indeed, yeah. I'll try to keep it all cool here in the County Cricket Podcast today in case it gets a bit heated between the Sussex and the Lancashire fan in today's podcast. But yeah, just for the listeners out there, basically today's weekly wrap-up podcast, we're just going to be going through the weekly news. Then we'll be talking a bit about Sussex and previewing their season ahead of the 2021 County Championship. And then if there's time at the end, I suppose we have to talk about the England-sized elephant in the room. That's a tremendous loss against India in the first ODI in Pune. But to get this week's weekly wrap-up started then, let's start, Joe, with the weekly news. And let's start with your county. Because
finally.
I know. After last week, what did we say on last week's podcast? We needed to see Lancs make some moves. What did they do?
Three overseas.
Exactly. Three overseas. So, Joe, I'm actually going to pass over to you for this one. What do you make of Lancashire signing Shreyas Iyer, Jackson Bird and Finn Allen for each of the three respective tournaments heading into 2021?
Yeah, so start with Jackson Bird. For me, this is a good signing. It doesn't like wow me. It's not incredible, but it's a solid, solid signing. I think Jackson Bird is a class player. The only reason I say that is because I don't see why we need another seamer. I think we probably needed a middle order batter more than we did Jackson Bird. But to be honest, I'm not complaining. He offers bags and bags of experience. He's having a really good Sheffield Shield, so he's taken 30 wickets now in this Sheffield Shield for Tasmania, and also scored a pretty good 50 the other day, or the other night as well. So yeah, to be honest, as I say, it doesn't wow me because I don't really think we necessarily need it, and I do think that may create a bit of an issue in, towards the back end of the season when these young guys who maybe haven't had as much game time get a chance. But hey, like I say, I'm not complaining. We've got a top quality player who's played for his country at Test level, and yeah, six games. Hopefully, we can make the most out of him. And Sussex, I'm sure, will have fun facing up to him on the first game. Actually, I don't think he is here for the first game. I'm pretty sure he joins.
He's joined for eight matches, so that's going to be throughout the season.
Yeah, so actually, in that case, Sussex are very lucky that they dodged a bullet there. In early April, facing up to Jackson Bird.
We might get him in the second game, so
yeah,
we might get to face him.
Well, it's better facing him a bit later on than in the first game of the season on the 8th of April. On a cloudy morning in Hove, and then a new ball. Said you'd have to face Mahmood. So yeah, good luck with that. But we'll talk a little bit about that later on.
It's already started.
To be fair though, I actually think Sussex are a great county. I don't have anything against Sussex at all. So I've been a bit harsh here, but
it'll be all the way up in Scotland. So it's all right.
So yeah, as I say, great signing, in my opinion, but I don't really think we need him. But as I say, not complaining. You know, when you get a player like Jackson Bird, you take it, don't you? So, yeah, I think that's a good signing. Next, we then signed the same day, literally like minutes later, someone who you'll know a bit more about, Aaron, and that's Finn Allen. Now, I've not seen a great deal of him, I'll be honest, but I've seen like clips of him now on Twitter and he seems like an absolute gun. So I'm very interested to see how he fits into the side. I mean, Luke, I know you have an opinion on that, which we will talk about in a minute. But firstly, Aaron, as I say, you've probably seen a lot more than him than I have. Obviously out in New Zealand. And also he's playing for the RCB this year in the IPL, which is obviously your side. So yeah, give me the lowdown on Finn Allen.
It's a great signing. It's an absolutely brilliant signing. The fact is today as well, he was named in New Zealand's T20I squad for the Bangladesh series as well. So potentially going to make his international debut for the Black Caps. I can't say enough good things about him. He's an absolute monster at the top of the order. You look at his strike rate for this year's Super Smash, which for those who don't know is basically New Zealand's T20 Blast. 193.93. This is an opening batsman, 193.93. To go along with that incredible strike rate, hit 25 sixes, which just so happened to be the most in the entire tournament. Hit six half centuries, scored 512 runs, and averaged 56.88. I mean, it's absolutely...
It seems like a great signing. On paper, and from what I've seen and what you just told me there, seems like a great signing.
It is.
But yeah, I mean, as I mentioned a bit earlier, Luke, we were discussing before the podcast actually how he's going to fit into the side. Now, personally, I would like to see him bat at number three because I don't really want to see the end of Livingston and Davis at the top of the order. So, I mean, I just think that's, in my opinion, in one of the top owning partnerships in the Vitality Blast, amongst all counties, in my opinion, but call me biased, whatever. But as I said, Luke, you do have an opinion on actually where he may fit in and why maybe Lanx have signed him. So do you want to just kind of explain that?
Yeah, I think, as Aaron said, I think you can't really complain with Finn Allen's numbers. The most interesting thing about him, actually, is that he was at Auckland before he went to Wellington. So he wasn't really getting the coverage he wanted at Auckland because they have Martin Guptill, Colin Munro, Glenn Phillips in that top order. So New Zealand quality. So he made the move to Wellington, which was great. Struck up a good partnership with Devin Conway at the top of the order. But then moving around the world, and the IPL might help him before he goes to Lancashire because he is an opening batter. And like, as you said, Davies and Livingston have been so prolific. Not just prolific, but they understand how to bat at Old Trafford, which is why...
Yeah, and they complement each other so well as well. Yeah. You know, Davies favours that offside, whereas Livingston loves to hit on the leg side predominantly. And that just complements each other so well. Davies can bat the overs, Livingston can get 50 off 30 and that's it. So, yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I just had to point that out.
I think... knowing how to win at Old Trafford has been big for Lanx. I think they've done very well at Old Trafford. Davies and Livingston have been a big part of that. And as you said, they complement each other so well. So it might be. And we thought we would see it at Perth Scorchers when Livingston was at Perth because they had Roy and Munro there as well, Jason Roy and Colin Munro. And they thought Livingston might come into the middle. And he actually started not opening the batting and then quickly was promoted to open the batting with Roy and Livingston. So Lanx may move Livingston to the middle because that's how Liam Livingston might see his way into the England team. The T20 series against India showed England, I think, is that they've got a lot of kind of top order style batters trying to fit from one to six. But Liam Livingston is probably competing with Sam Billings to try and get through the door there. Obviously, England have got a world-class lineup, but should Owen Morgan think that he's shoehorning too many top-order players into that middle order, then Liam Livingston might be making a play at Lanx. And that might help us understand why Finn Allen has been recruited. A very able replacement, replacement for Liam Livingston at the top. He's not obviously not going to replace him in the side because they're both play. But yeah, you could well see Finn Allen and Alex Davies opening the batting for Lanx this year.
Yeah, and that'd be interesting. That'd be really interesting. Honestly, I'd not thought about it like that. And I guess one thing England do need in that T20 side is to break up the left-handers because they have so many. You know, Milan, obviously Bairstow is in there, but generally they have Milan, Stokes and Morgan. You know, that's quite a lot of left-handers in that middle order. So, and Moeen, you could argue, if he comes into the side.
And then Sam after that as well. Sam Curran.
Yeah, and then Sam Curran. So there's so many left-handers. So yeah, that, I mean, that would, it would be interesting to see how that would work for Lanx as well, because as much as I want Livingston to get into the England side on a Lanx fans basis, you also have to think about Lanx and how that would affect Lanx. But as you say, he seems like a more than able player, Finn Allen. So yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see how he fits in, and also how the rest of the side fits as well, because obviously the likes of Stephen Croft, you know, the likes of Keaton Jennings as well, Dane Villas. So it's going to be interesting to see how Lanx go about that. But yeah, only time will tell, I guess. Hopefully we can win the T20 this year. So that'd be good. So yeah. Also, actually, just on Finn Allen, it kind of reminds me, as you were talking there, Luke, about the situation with Tom Banton a little bit on almost a bigger scale when he left Warwickshire. Because, you know, I mean, Aaron's kind of still not really got over this. The fact that Warwickshire had him, and look at him now. Tom Banton is an international superstar, playing franchise tournaments and has played for England as well. Do you see parallels there?
Yeah, a little bit, actually. And I think Tom Banton's rise was meteoric, wasn't it? It was, what was it, 2019? He burst onto the scene. Mm-hmm. Had that. I think he lit up the BBL. I think he did really well in that first BBL he had. And then he kind of got undone again. And this is probably me going off on a tangent, but I feel like with Tom Banton, he got derailed when people asked him to do things he wasn't quite used to. And that was kind of bat in the middle order, bat at three. Takeaway from opening the batting. And this is where almost Lanx could learn, or whoever has Finn Allen, whether it's RCB, Lanx, Wellington, could learn, New Zealand could learn with Finn Allen and not move him from a position that he's been so effective in. And the numbers that Aaron read out there are unbelievable. They're not kind of on the cusp. You're not like 190 strike rate opening the batting is elite, like more than elite. So be interesting to see if they try and fit Finn Allen into their team, or if they trust him enough with limited experience to do the role that he's done. It's the same with Banton, actually. Like Banton, 14 games opening the batting in the Vitality Blood, maybe 15, did really well, then moved into England's ODI team at number 6. And from there, it kind of went down. Wouldn't say downhill for him, because he's had...
His career changed a little bit.
He's changed massively. So be interesting to see. Finn Allen's obviously had the start, and you can compare that with Tom Banton's start almost. And then we'll see how other teams treat him on the franchise circuit, or how New Zealand treat him. And it'll be interesting to see if he can adapt better than Tom Banton did.
Yeah,
that is a wonderful point. That is an absolutely excellent point. And it will be interesting, of course, because he is one of these... Well, he's tipped to be a future superstar, a bit like Tom Banton. So... will be very, very interesting. And Joe, I suppose, are you happy with Finn Allen?
Oh, yeah, massively. With that opening pair, or with just Finn Allen? I want to see him. I know this is going against everything Lucas just said, but I want to see him back three, because I want Livingston and Davies to continue, because I don't think you can really break up a partnership like that. It would be like breaking up Roy and Bairstow on a smaller scale in ODI cricket. You know, you don't do that. Obviously, it's on a more county scale, but it's not something England would ever do unless they're forced to, like they were in the World Cup. So, like I say, it's going against everything Luke just said, but I still want to see Livingston and Davies. But if that's what Livingston wants to do, and that's the way he wants to take his career, and I know he'll still be able to contribute from, you know, 4, 5, 6, wherever that may be, probably not 6, but 4 or 5, with the bat and with the ball as well still. Then look, so be it. And, you know, as we've said, Finn Allen seems like a more than apt replacement at the top of the order for Livingston. So it will be interesting. It really will.
Oh, he is. He's a brilliant signing, Joe. He really is. And I can't wait to see him for RCB. I mean, he's going to be an absolute superstar. He really is. But I suppose that wasn't the only news from Lanx. And I suppose we're saving the biggest until last.
The best, yeah.
Because the Lancashire India connection has reformed yet again. I mean, just think of all the great Indian players who have played for Lanx over the years, and now you're adding another name to that illustrious list in Shreyas Iyer. I couldn't believe this when the news broke.
No.
Joe, what do you make of this signing? It's absolutely incredible for this year's Royal Under One Day Cup, isn't it?
I think this could genuinely be a group-winning signing, because he's only available for now for the groups. So for me, this could be a I mean, he's a match winner. He's a world-class player. He really is. Unfortunately, he's just dislocated his shoulder, so he's going to miss, 2 months or 2 or 3 months. Yeah, he misses like half the IPL, which is a shame because I was looking forward to seeing him playing in these ODIs and in the IPL as well. But look, it's such a good signing, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be fit by July, August time. Well, August, the competition starts, isn't it? So I'm pretty sure he'll be back to full fitness by then. And like I say, it's such a good signing. It really, for me, could be the difference between qualification and not, because recently Lancs have just not been there in one day cricket at all. It's been disappointing. 2019, we didn't quite get through. We almost got through. 2019, we got to we played Hampshire. It was the year before that we almost got through by the skin of our teeth. And then 2019, we lost to Hampshire at the Aegeus Bowl. And I really think someone like Shreyas could be a difference maker. Of course, every side is going to be weaker now. Every side has had players taken away to the 100. Lancs are one of the teams who have been hit the hardest by that, alongside Sussex, who are another side. So to me, this is in everyone's... it's a great signing in everyone's interest. It's a great signing for Lancs because we've got a great player. Great signing for Shreyas because he gets experience. And also, the BCCI are winning here as well, in my opinion, because Shreyas gets to play white ball cricket in England, gets a lot more exposure against on some great wickets at Old Trafford and around the country, where he probably hasn't had as much experience as some of the other players. So look, it was always in the BCCI's interest to send out players to county cricket. I'm surprised more haven't. And maybe this will be the start of something between counties and the BCCI. Who knows? It's a shame you can't play in the T20 Blast. But yeah, as I say, great signing. I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. And I mean, he will also have to play against Sussex. So I think that's the first game as well, isn't it? Is that's right. Yeah. And there's no venue for that, I don't think, yet. So I'll tell you what, Shreyas Iyer on an outground could be a lot of runs scored.
Well, yeah, just one thing though, Joe, and I suppose we do have to mention this, you touched upon it there. He does have a torn labrum, so he's going to be out for potentially 3-4 months. So he's not going to be playing a lot of cricket. I just wanted to ask you one thing about Shreyas. Does that lack of game time actually worry you as a Lancs fan? Because he's going to be coming off a lengthy injury. He's been in brilliant form. That's going to cut that completely off. Are you not worried that it'll come to Lancs a little bit rusty? What are your thoughts on his injury?
He's going to play in the back end of the IPL, no?
Well, it depends. Or, we don't know. It depends how the surgery goes, said. Doesn't it?
If he plays in the back end of the IPL, definitely nothing to worry about, regardless of whether he's in form or not, because the most important thing is game time. And even if you're, you know, class players like Shreyas, and like anyone, if you're a top player, you're going to find form at some point. Look at Jason Roy now. He's getting back to his best. So look, if he doesn't get any game time, of course, that's going to be a bit worrying. But I guess that's professional sport, isn't it? That's life. That's what happens. You know, people get injured. I could give you countless examples of it. People get injured and come back with a bang, score hundreds, take wickets. So for me, it is obviously, it's not ideal if he doesn't play any cricket until he comes to Lancs. But I guess he's only doing as much as any county player now. You know, they've had a long time off. They've had a net and now they're back to playing games.
Yeah, but they're not coming off the back of a surgery, are they? That's the difference.
Yeah, but true, but again, there's so many players who've had surgery and who've come back and are fine. So, you know, like I say, with a class player like Shreyas Iyer, I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue. I'm hoping not anyway. I guess only time will tell.
But, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely echo your words there, Joe. I like Shreyas Iyer. He's absolutely brilliant. Averages around 45 in ODI cricket for India. He is an absolutely world-class talent. And he's a really classy player as well. He's someone who can anchor an innings and then really explode as the innings progresses.
But he's a leader.
Of course, yeah. Well. Yeah, captain. Well, was going to captain the Delhi Capitals in this year's IPL, captain them in last year's tournament as well. But Luke, I just wanted to ask you, let's say this was Sussex and it was one of your new signings or one of your returning overseas players, David Veitch, for example, or Rashid Khan. If they were coming off the back of an injury and hadn't had any game time and were just rocking up in the county circuit, would that worry you at all, or would that not be too much of a fuss? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think if you rewind to, say, David Veitch's first season or Rashid Khan's first season, obviously, yeah, there's always going to be that concern around it, because there's obviously other factors as well. Obviously, he's got his injury and stuff, but he's got to acclimatise to England, living in England, training facilities, a different club. There's only so much, you know, the human brain can compromise. So there will be a lot of stuff going on in his head as he turns up. But I agree with both of you there. He's a class player. And I don't think that should affect him. He's also at a good age. He's at a good age where he's not young.
Experienced.
He's played enough games, let's say. To be able to get through this situation and to recount on his experience. So it's not like he's going to be coming off, you know, a handful of list day games. He's played enough list day games, played ODIs, obviously got the experience of the IPL separate to that. So he's got a lot of experience to recount on. So with players like that, you just are praying that the surgery is successful, and obviously everyone wishes him all the best to make sure he's fit. And I think it'll be a real real horrible moment if he doesn't get over and play for Lancs because of that injury. Because from a Sussex point of view, I know we've got you first game there, we're excited to bowl him. We've obviously got a young team, bowlers who want to learn, and we want to learn from bowling at the best. So we'll be gutted as well.
There's not really many better to bowl to be honest.
Yeah. We'll be gutted as well if Shreyas doesn't come, because you want to play teams when they're at the strongest possible. We know the 100 takes away a lot of players, but bringing this extra quality back into the competition is only good for county cricket. So, yeah, to answer your question, I don't think Lancs fans should be worried that Shreyas will take time to acclimatise. I think the only time he'll take to acclimatise is natural for anyone who hasn't played much cricket over here. Other than that, he's a class act, and I'm sure we'll see some big scores throughout the tournament.
Let's hope so.
I also echo
that. 1,000 runs wouldn't go amiss.
But yeah, I think we're all in agreement here that we want to see Shreyas Iyer in this year's tournament, because he's absolutely
especially you, because Warwick about to play against him.
Yeah, to be fair, I can just sit back and relax and watch a Shreyas Iyer masterclass. So yeah, I wouldn't mind that at all. But yeah, fingers crossed, Shreyas. Of course, we here at the County Cricket Podcast wishing him the best of luck with his surgery and the road to recovery after that. And fingers crossed we get to see him, because as I said, Joe, I mean, if I was a Lancs fan right now, I'd be incredibly, incredibly excited. And what a signing. What?
But all I'm saying signing. Is I think he's the best new overseas signing this year.
Well,
would you disagree, Luke?
Well, no, I've just got to stick up for our boy Travis Head, everyone. So,
Travis Head's a class player.
Obviously, looking forward to having him, but I'm obviously going to sit here and back Travis. So,
That's fair enough. That is fair enough.
It is. And of course, we'll talk about Travis as the podcast progresses. But moving on from Lancs then, because that was a large chunk of this week's news.
It was.
And so be it, though. I mean, three quality signings there. But yeah, let's go to one of Lancashire's North Group rivals then. Let's go to Notts, because Dan Christian is returning for the 2021 T20 Blast. We don't really need to go into much more detail with Dan Christian. We all know what he's capable of. Joe, you personally.
I watched it on TV.
You still remember the semi-final there,
don't you? Yeah, we don't. Okay, quickly moving on.
But yeah, it's good to see Dan Christian back. And then the second piece of business from the Outlaws, well, this week, I suppose, was Dane Patterson. Now, this is an interesting one, because he was originally meant to be a Coldpack player last season. That deal fell through. So the Outlaws have brought him back now as an overseas player for the entirety of the 2021 season. So, Luke, I'll start with you for this one. Have you seen much of Dane Patterson? And if so, what do you make of him as a bowler? Obviously, an incredibly talented seamer. We've seen him play for the Proteas against England in that last series down in South Africa. But what do you make of him as a seam bowler, and what are you expecting him to do in this year's county season?
Well, I think a lot of us would have seen him in white ball, South Africa predominantly, which I think is where he bursts onto the scene. Very good at the death. He's a Yorker bowler, so that's his main skill at the death. Obviously, he's got his variations as well. So I guess Notts have boosted their death bowling there with Dane Patterson, and obviously they got Dan Christian, Jake Ball back on the scene as well. Kind of came back last year and then went around the world, or went to the Sixers. So there, that's good. But I think what's underrated is his his first class numbers are pretty good. I think he's had a pretty good last couple of years in the kind of South Africa domestic competition where you've got the franchises. I think, like, when you look at the kind of charts, he's near the top, so he's done well there. And I think it's quite a shrewd signing. As a cold pack signing, it would have been a very good signing. Obviously, it wouldn't have taken your overseas slot. As an overseas signing, with we've got to remember what's available. Australia, New Zealand seasons are overlapping. Then you've got various series going on as well, like Bangladesh, obviously Pakistan, South Africa. And once you find out a player that's not kind of involved in that international kind of calendar, but has international experience, it's pretty hard to turn down. I think that's why, and I know you're going to talk about it later, we've seen a lot of West Indians signed. But then when a player like Dane Patterson's available with what's available, I think it becomes a very good sign, especially given that you get him for the full season. So on the surface, it might not seem like a amazing signing, but given what's available and given how smart counties are having to be with their business, I think it's a good addition to their seam bowling ranks.
I think that's a great word to describe it, actually, Luke. Shrewd. It is. I agree. He's definitely someone who goes under the radar. And I'm glad that Notts have kind of fulfilled that agreement to some extent in 2021, of course, was meant to come in last season. But he is a very, very good bowler. You mentioned there in four-day cricket, he is right up there near the stats in 50-over and Red Bull cricket. He is a wonderful, wonderful seamer. And I think him and Jake Ball in particular, those two together, could be pretty interesting, to say the
least.
And
in white ball cricket as well, Harry Gurney will be back for Notts. Let's not forget. So
yeah, not a bad attack, that, at all.
It's not a bad attack to have to defend the title with, let's be honest. It's certainly not.
Very, very true. But Luke, you mentioned there and alluded to the West Indian bowling and the West Indian signings for this year's County Championship. Of course, we have had another one. So last week we spoke about Kemar Roach and Miguel Cummins. But this week, at Warwickshire's closest rivals, Worcestershire down at New Road, Altzari Joseph has signed for the first 7 championship games for the pairs. So Luke, I know you love your Caribbean cricket. I'm guessing Altzari Joseph, you love watching him as well, steaming in red ball and white ball cricket. What do you make of this particular piece of business from the Midland side?
I think, first of all, it's a brilliant signing for West Indies cricket because it's obviously getting their players' exposure over here in county cricket. I think it's still the place to come if you want to develop your Red Bull skills. So for the West Indies to get that many players over here is fantastic for them. As a test match player, like as in test matches, they'll be much better for that. Altzari Joseph himself, it's a great move for him. Obviously, we all remember he burst into the scene with the Mumbai Indians and got that
6 for 12.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous, isn't it?
They got hammered crazy by Butler in the very next game.
Yeah, and then that ended his IPL career. The thing with him is that he obviously bowls good pace. Bowls first change for the West Indies, and he's in a good attack with Kemar Roach, Shannon Gabriel, and Jason Holder, and holds his own. I think he was quite impressive over here last summer. It's been tough for the West Indies since they went to New Zealand, which was hard, and then Bangladesh, there wasn't much on offer for those seamers. So he hasn't really kicked on as much as people would have liked to see, but they have to understand the opposition, the conditions they're playing in. But he's a great signing for them. Very underrated with the bat as well. Batting at 8 at the moment for the West Indies. He's got 250s in his last 3 innings or something as we speak. So he's more than capable with the bat, can contribute there. So again, good for Worcestershire because I can't think off the top of my head that they have a bowler that bowls his pace in excess of 85 clicks. So it adds a bit of pace to their attack. And then I think I read as well that the likes of Pat Brown wouldn't be available for the start of the season due to injury. I think there's one other as well. So obviously bolster seam bowling attack. So yeah, I think it's a good signing and all. Very good with the ball, underrated with the bat. So he might get a couple of swashbuckling 50s later on the order. So look out for those as well.
Very, very good point. And yeah, I mean, it pains me to say, obviously, as a Bears fan, but yeah, pretty good piece of business that from from Worcestershire. Hopefully Yeltsari doesn't do too well against the Bears, though, in our particular county championship game. But he is a great, great talent. I like Alzari.
Really good player. Yeah.
Also had one of the greatest celebrations in the Caribbean Premier League, which if you just put it into YouTube, just put Alzari Joe's celebration. It was absolutely brilliant. One of the most just, what to say, cutthroat celebrations. It was absolutely brilliant. But yeah, Alzari Joseph, cannot wait to see him in county cricket. And of course, wishing him the best to some extent as a Warwickshire fan. But moving on to our final piece of business from the North Group, before we just touch upon the South Group, of course. George Scrimshaw, talking of Worcestershire, used to play for the Pears, has joined Derbyshire on a one-year deal. Now, I'm not sure if you two know much about George Scrimshaw. Well, no, that's absolutely fine. I shall fill in the knowledge then. So basically, he's 6'7". So he's pretty big, a bit like Toby Pettman from Notts. Remember when we spoke about him last month, Joe? So he's impressed in their preseason trials. Ajmal Shahzad, very, very impressed. So they've signed him on a one-year deal. So for me, that's going to be very, very interesting. Now, for those who don't know, George has had an absolutely horrendous time with injuries. Burst onto the scene in 2017, I think it was, for Worcester. Took some good wickets as well. Had a couple of great performances. I think he took 1 for 29 in a T20 Blast game. And to be honest, he was touted as a very, very good prospect. But injuries just derailed him. So for him personally, this is fantastic. And then you look at that Derbyshire pace attack for this season. Sam Connors, Nick Potts, Ben Aitchison, Michael Cohen, Dustin Melton, Billy Stanlake come in as well. I mean, that's a pretty, pretty good seam attack. I must admit, I think the Falcons have done a decent bit of business there. So, of course, I wish George the very, very best of luck personally. Be interesting to see if he plays against us in our season opening in 15 days' time, which is brilliant, isn't it, as well? 15 days until the county championship gets back underway. But yeah, I wish George the very, very best of luck heading into this season. And fingers crossed, he can stay injury-free as well. So moving on from the North Group then, let's promptly wrap up this week's weekly news with the South Group then. Not as much going on in the South Group, I've got to be honest. But we'll go to Glamorgan first. Andy Balburnie has rejoined the Welsh County as a temporary replacement for Marnus Labuschagne, who unfortunately is missing the first month of the season due to his commitments with Queensland in Australian domestic cricket. Joe, what do you make of that? Because Andy Balburnie came to Glamorgan last season, obviously Ireland captain, has a lot of leadership qualities, performed pretty well as well for the Welsh County last season. What do you make of that particular piece of business as a temporary replacement for the Welsh side?
Yeah, I think Andy Balburnie is a great player. I think he's someone who, if Ireland had had a bit more test cricket, he's someone who could have made a real name for himself worldwide. I think, you know, when he came to Glamorgan last year, I remember there was, I think it was against, I want to say against Gloucestershire. He played one particularly good innings. I feel like it was at Edgbaston. I might be really wrong there. But I want to say it was on Sky and he played a really good innings on Sky. And it was really, really kind of assured in T20 cricket. And also, obviously, scored that 100 at the Aegeus Bowl for Ireland in that great partnership with Paul Sterling. So I think Andy Balburnie is a great player. Obviously, he's not necessarily going to quite live up to the standards of Marnus because he is the third best in the world or second best in the world or something like that. But not to say Balburnie's not a class player. He's a really, really good player. Obviously another leader in the dressing room. And I think if there's people who you kind of list to replace or to be understudy to Marnus, Balburnie is quite high on Glamorgan's list. Obviously has played there before, has scored runs for them before. So I think that's a great signing. I'm a big fan of Balburnie. I'm surprised no county has gone in for him before last year because obviously they could have got him in as a local player. I'm surprised no one did that.
I think why this is a good signing for Balburnie himself and for Ireland cricket is that they actually don't have any first-class cricket scheduled this summer either. So I think Balburnie would have been desperate to get over. I think what you've seen in what we spoke about with Dane Patterson there, you've seen a lot of loyalty rewarded for overseas players. Well, Balburnie helped out Glamorgan at a time where they didn't have anyone. And then Glamorgan are kind of repaying the favour by saying, look, we've got a spot here. He's not obviously got amazing first-class numbers, but they're obviously repaying him for the job he did in the Blast by saying, look, we've got a spot here. They need batters as well. Desperately, they needed a batter. So, I know this because we got them second game.
And he's a good red ball player though as well. You mentioned he's not got good first class stats. He played well in the Ireland Test that England played. at Lourdes just after the World Cup. He played really well.
I was there for that.
Then, he didn't get like, I don't think he got to 50, but he got 30 odd, and it was a really good knock again. Him and Sterling. So, yeah, he's a good player in my opinion. I interrupted you again there, Luke. Sorry.
He's definitely a player on the rise. I think. I think those numbers are spread out for a like 8 year period where he hasn't played much first class cricket in that time. So the numbers can lie like that, where it's, if we looked at probably his more condensed numbers, you'd probably see better. So yeah, I agree. I think he's a good player. He's a good sign for Glamorgan because they needed a batter. Like I said, Marnus is obviously a huge gap to fill. Balburnie will go some way to filling part of that hole. I don't think you can't really fully fill by got 1,000 runs, but I think it's a good signing because they needed a batter. And as I said earlier, there's not much around due to the international scheduling, the IPL, etc. So for what's available, very good signing.
Yeah, I'd concur with that. It is, again, we mentioned that word again, shrewd. It is. It makes sense. It's a good. Temporary signing, I suppose, just to kind of cover up the loss of Marnus Labuschagne for the time being. So yeah, wishing Andy the best of luck heading into this season for the first month, of course, with the Welsh County. But just to wrap up this week's weekly news then, before we go into today's main body, which is, of course, about Sussex County Cricket Club, and we'll be previewing their season. Just wanted to say congratulations to Ian Holland, because obviously a former guest of ours, who was a very popular guest here on the County Cricket Podcast, has signed a contract extension with the Southern County until at least the end of the 2022 season. So just from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast, Ian, congratulations. And yeah, can't massive. Wait to see him in County Cricket again. Opening the batting for Hampshire, taking wickets. Yeah, lovely stuff. So yeah, congratulations, Ian, from us two here at TCCP. But yeah, that's pretty much it for our weekly news then. I mean, a lot of weekly news again, wasn't there, Joe? A lot of weekly news.
A lot, especially with Lanx well. For once. For once. Makes a change.
It does make a nice change. But of course, we do have to move into this week's main topic then, which does revolve around Sussex County Cricket Club, the Martlets, GOSBTS, good old Sussex by the Sea. So yeah, Luke, to start today's preview then, let's look ahead to the Championship. Of course, we alluded to it earlier, 15 days' time. There's 15 days until the Red Rose take on the Martlets down at Hove. So first of all, what do you make of the new County Championship structure? Are you in favour of it, or are you in preference of the traditional two-division system? What are your thoughts on the structure itself?
Well, I think it's exciting for sure. I think getting to play different teams is always fun. Because, for example, we haven't played Yorkshire since about 2015, so we get to play Yorkshire this season. Just things like that. I think they talk about the stand Div 1, Div 2 being quite wide, but this kind of brings the stand together, because if you've got the better teams spread out, then the lesser teams actually have an incentive to raise their game, so to speak. So I'm a big fan of it. I think as well, almost takes out the right term probably is competitiveness. I think towards the bottom of the Division 2, you can almost see teams, once they realise they can't get promoted, lose interest in the competition, and then because they can't get relegated, they there's no consequence. So
dead rubbers.
There's a lot of dead rubbers, and I think this format does take away a dead rubber, especially in the first kind of 7-8 games. You're going to see kind of competitive cricket, and then once we go into the second phase as well, it'll be, for the fight will be unbelievable. So I think there'll be a lot more interesting cricket. There'll be better games to follow. And personally, I'm a fan of it.
Yeah. Again, we're hearing it there from a perspective of someone who, you know, from a Division 2 side, basically. We obviously, as I've said before, we both support sides in Division 1. We have a chance of winning the championship should it have been the normal structure. Now anyone can win it. You know, Leicester, Derbyshire, those two teams who have been bottom of the Division 2 for years, and we mentioned dead rubbers, they've played a lot of dead rubbers in the past few years, and they now have a great chance of winning the county championship. They can get into that first pool of the second stage. Yeah, I guess that's how you can phrase it. And, they can win the county championship, and that's an opportunity they've not had for years. So I really think it's an interesting initiative. And you know, as I said, we've kind of looked at it from almost a closed-minded view of, we can win the county championship anyway. well, certainly me, we can win the county championship anyway. I'm out of force either way. But now it gives a, adds competition, really. Let's be honest, it adds competition.
Well, fair enough. And of course, we'll have to wait and see how it actually pans out. But it should be a very, very interesting season. It really should. And as you said, all 18 counties are going to be licking their lips at the prospect of even trying to reach that county championship final. And of course, the Bob Willis Trophy final as well.
Bob Willis Trophy final, yeah. Essex will be looking to retain both as well.
Yeah.
So that'll be a, they're the team to beat, as we are at the moment. You know, Essex will be looking to retain both. So it's going to be interesting. It really is. But kind of, let's look forward then, Luke, to the start of the season, which, as Aaron said, does start very, very soon on the 8th of April. Which kind of teams do you, well, we are in the same group. So in our group, which kind of teams do you, or have you kind of pinpointed as a side, you know, collectively, which kind of teams are you looking out for? I mean, obviously, Lancs are going to be one because we're the first game.
Yeah, it'll be easy for me to say all of them. I think at the moment, we've got a, I think we've got a points deduction to overturn, so that'll be good. We already start on, I think, minus 18 or something because of Mitch Claydon. And Ball Tampering. So that'll be an interesting start for us. So we're already kind of behind the eight ball. So we'll approach the season as we've got nothing to lose. We'll look to win as many games as we can because we can't get anything from anything else. So we're going quite aggressive. We've looked at our start of the season. We're quite excited because you've got Lancashire and Yorkshire. There's sandwiched in between Glamorgan. That's our first three games. So obviously we're not naive. We know that the teams to beat are probably Lancashire, Yorkshire, Kent in that division. And then obviously Northants and Glamorgan went up, Northants went up, Glamorgan pushed them all the way. So it's a strong league, and you can't look past anyone because they've all had quality history in recent season. They've all had quality moments. So we understand the challenge, but you know, Lancashire and Yorkshire are always big games for anyone to play against them just because of the history that's behind the club. So I think if you're pinpointing teams that you thought were the favourites in our league, and I can say it without getting in trouble because we've got the points deduction, so it's only logical for me to say that that Yorkshire and Lancashire will probably be the favourites to finish one and two, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think I've probably put Lancs at number one. And yeah, I mean, I'd overlooked Sussex's point deduction. Do you think that kind of changes mentality? Like, I mean, like you said, we've kind of got nothing to lose. Do you think that will almost increase your chances in a way of going through? Because, I mean, obviously it's a big margin, points margin. 18 points is like, it's pretty much two wins, isn't it? A win and a bonus point. So do you think that's kind of going to increase your chances in a way because you'll be playing maybe more aggressive brand of cricket potentially because you want to win and there's kind of less pressure?
I saw Ian Salisbury's interview. Obviously, I see him every day, but it's interesting how they speak to the media and stuff. And Saul said he's not afraid to talk about winning, which for me is music to my ears because obviously you want to be winning games of cricket. So he's going to be aggressive and try and take the positive route all the time. I know James Kirtley, as assistant at T20 coach, is looking for aggressive options as well. So I think you'll see us hopefully take attacking options during our games, whether that is first-class cricket, but also across the season. But also it's a great opportunity for us because we've got a young team and we're not going to make excuses and say that they're young players because we think they're capable. And I think they proved last year that they were capable, the likes of Carson, Croker, and then we've got Atkins and Hunt. Sean Hunt joined us from Surrey. Atkins and Hunt both took five for the England young Lions just before the season finished. So they've obviously got the talent there. And then we put that around the likes of Salt, Head, Van Zyl, Ben Brown. And we've got a team there that's got a lot of potential and the ceiling's very high. It's just obviously enabling them to reach that potential. And that's obviously our job within the club to do that. But we've got a good league where the standard's high. And that's what I was talking about. Hopefully the standard of these other teams can bring us up to the standard. And that's what we found last year, is because we were in a league with Surrey, Hampshire, Kent, Middlesex, Essex. And we actually, I think apart from the Kent game, we were leading after the first innings. So by innings three, we were ahead of the game runs-wise. And we got into positions last year where we thought we should be taking the game on. But unfortunately, a bit of an experience, maybe the game not going our way, meant that we didn't get the results we wanted. So we found that already, that being in the highest standard of league brings us up and brings our players up to the potential we know they have. And they should have taken some heart and belief from what they kind of... Oh, I know we only won one game, but from positions we were in, it was quite positive. So we hope to bring that into this year and kind of going with a no-fear attitude. And I think we can do it because, like I said, we've got kind of previous history of getting close. We just need to almost learn how to win. And once we learn how to win, I think we'll be fine.
Fair enough.
I think that's a really good outlook on this season. You know, as you say, you already won one game, but you kind of made those strides to putting yourself in winning positions. So, you know, cricket is, it's a really common phrase. It's a bit of a cliche phrase, but it's a marathon, not a sprint, isn't it? I mean, obviously the actual game, four-day cricket, is a marathon, not a sprint. But also, when you're trying to build from a young side like Sussex are, you know, you're not necessarily expecting to win the league this season, last season, or maybe even next season. But in the next few years, that's obviously going to be your aspiration. So, yeah, I guess just even putting yourself in those positions last season, even if you didn't end up winning, is still positive because it's still an improvement, right? So, I mean, that's the way I look at it from a neutral perspective. So, yeah.
You've just got to see kind of what happened, you know, like George Garton getting out Sir Alistair Cook, obviously small in detail, but massive, massive for him as a cricketer, as a Red Bull cricketer, the way Jack Carson and bowled across the season, that first game at Hampshire and then the last game at Surrey. We gave a debut to 16-year-old James Coles. Again, young player, but if they're good enough, I think they'll play. And that's the thing with our coaching staff, is that they have a lot of belief in our young players. And I think you can see, you can hope to see kind of a lot of that talent shared out. But also, it's not disregarding the older players. You know, I work with them every day, so maybe I'm biased, but Stuart Meek has been bowling well. You know, it'll be good to see him back. Aaron Thomason, still young. We got him from you guys. He's been looking really good. So even players that other fans might disregard, I'm obviously seeing him every day, so I won't be disregarding them because I'm going to work with them, so I should know what they're doing. But they're playing well as well. So hopefully what we've seen in the Nets, we can transfer onto the pitch. And if we can do that, I think we'll be in a good place.
Of course, yeah. And from my personal perspective, Azzetti, what an absolute cult hero. He is down at Edgbaston, wishing him the very best of luck down at Sussex. I mean, it's been far too long since I've seen him play some cricket. So, yeah, it should be nice seeing Aaron Thomason back in action in 2021. But you mentioned there about inexperience. And let's face it, there has been a lot of change down at Sussex. We mentioned this pretty much at the end of last season, didn't we, Joe? About all of the transfers and departures. Yeah, so, Luke, do you worry for this season about this lack of experience? Because you have got young guys like Crocombe, like Carson, like Atkins, Hunt, for example, and Delroy Rawlins. Let's not forget Delroy Rawlins, still a young player. I know he has a bit more county experience. But do you worry about losing the likes of Harry Finch, Luke Wells, Danny Briggs, Will Sheffield, Topley beforehand, Evans? There's been a lot of change down at Sussex. Are you worried about a lack of county experience heading into 2021? Or do you think that these young players can really rise to the occasion and challenge for silverware for Sussex this season?
Well, again, I'm biased, but obviously not so much because I know that we've got leaders in the dressing room. I know we've got Ben Brown and he's supported by Phil Salt, Ollie Robinson, Stian Van Zyl, who's with us. So Stian will play from the start. So I think we've got those players to drag them through who are good leaders in the dressing room, and the young players have got a lot about them as well. So, yeah, you're right. We can't deny that they're inexperienced because they're young in their careers, but they've got the players around them that will enable them to flourish. So we believe we've got a good combination. We know that we've got to work hard, and we know that we're not the finished article, and we know that we've got a lot to prove. But I think our team especially will buy into that, they'll be excited to show what they can do, because we've spoken about it at Sussex, and I think Ian's talked about it a lot, where we're not just making players for Sussex, we're trying to make players for England, and that starts from young. So if we can give these players opportunities in county cricket and then hopefully see them go on and represent their country, then we're doing our job. And in the process, if we can win a few things as well, then brilliant. I think that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to develop our talented youngsters, and we know we've got the people around them on and off the pitch to enable them to flourish, and in turn we'll be successful in the field if everyone sticks to their job.
Good answer there, Luke. Very, very good answer. But of course, yeah, when was the last time Sussex won a trophy? It was 2010, wasn't it? Division 2.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, you've come very, very close, though. The T20 Blast, of course, very, very close on numerous occasions.
Yeah, we know that, and it's margins, it's fine margins. We, especially in the T20 Blast, we think about kind of, we got to the final against Worcester there, where Ben Cox played probably the innings of his life, and then it was Worcester again the following year, where we had Moeen Ali dropped. On about, I think it was single figures.
Five.
Alex Crowe dropped him off Ollie Robinson. And it happens. And obviously what happened last year with Lancs is, I think it was just, we didn't apply ourselves properly when we batted. I think it was a tough pitch.
The pitch looked really weird. Watched it on TV. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, that was such a weird game.
I think Lancs played very well there. And I think you saw kind of, why they've been so good. I don't necessarily think we bowled that badly. I just think maybe it was again fine margins when,
yeah,
if we'd got a big over somewhere in there, it might have been a different story. But we never quite got the momentum when we batted. So again, it's what we see as fine margins, because these knockout games can go either way. So yeah, we've come close, and we know that we want the trophy, and I think it's obvious that our best chance is in the T20 Blast, and I think that's where you see our resources going. But it doesn't mean there's not a great opportunity for us in first-class cricket and 50-over cricket, especially with the talent that we've got in the team.
Well, of course, yeah, you have to keep all of your options open. And you touch upon there putting more resources into T20 cricket. Because we spoke about this, didn't we, Joe, on a previous podcast, about the split coaching role down at Sussex, which is pretty unique. You're going to be the only county that we know of this season that's going to be utilising that technique. You've got Salisbury for the red ball stuff and then James Kirtley for the white ball. What do you make of that personally as an analyst? Does that actually produce any issues? Has it been quite smooth? What's that been like down at Hove with those two taking their respective roles?
Well, for me, it's been brilliant because Ian does first-class cricket, he'll do 50 over, and then James Kirtley will do T20. So, if obviously, as like, I'm a cricket badger, so I look at everything, I always look at everything. So, if I come up with ideas, I know I'm not overloading one. I'm not overloading Ian with all three formats. If I come up with first-class stuff, I can go to Ian. If I come up with T20 stuff, I go to James. And while they might seem separate, we're still one club. Obviously, yeah, they're both each other's assistant in the other format. So we're still one club, and they're aligned to give opportunity to players if it benefit and try and benefit the other. So an example would be, say, if Ravi Bapara needed form going into the T20 Blast, and I think Ian would be really open. Or you would, anyone would be open to having Ravi Bapara in the county championship team. So if that's what Ravi needs, then we'll accommodate him that way, and vice versa. If the T20 team can help if say Rashid Khan needed to find some rhythm, the T20 team would let him go or something to those random first class games in the middle. But I doubt that will happen. But that's just an example.
Let's hope for everyone's sake in our group it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think that will happen. It's just an example. I think for me, it's been really good. And the other thing is, obviously, we've had these coaches here for 12 months of the year. And I don't think that's what people realise on the outside, that obviously Jason Gillespie was with us for 6 months of the year. And obviously, he wasn't unavailable. He was very available to talk to about Sussex at any time. And it would be unfair for me to say if he wasn't. But obviously, you're very aware that he's got other jobs to do. and you kind of are always thinking, should you message or should you not? Or I found like I'm a bit of a, I have no filter really. I like to just throw things at coaches and stuff. I'm quite, I'm not very traditional in my thoughts, and that's why it's quite good to have coaches there kind of 12 months of the year, just reining me in, just saying, you can't, players won't like that. For example, this might upset a player if we did this. So one of them was like T20 retiring batsmen and stuff, they're going too slow. The coaches are like, well, players are human beings as well.
Do you actually suggest that?
It's just something.
I would be for that as well. I would definitely be up for that.
I think the best coaches like to be challenged. I think that's kind of part of the support staff's job, not just mine as analyst, but batting coach, bowling coach, things that like they should be challenging the head coach. And I think that's what they're very good at, is being challenged and discussing with you. It's not so much if I say something to say James or Ian and they don't agree with me and they be like, go away. They'll discuss it with me, and that's the best way to be. I've enjoyed working with them a lot, actually. They're very open to suggestion. If they don't agree with me, then they explain why they don't agree with me, and that's the way to grow, I think, as a club. It's been really good working with them both, and I think the separate coaches is actually quite a good move, because you should see kind of more energy going to each team, because a person isn't being split, a coach isn't being split thinking between first class cricket, 2020 cricket, 50 over cricket. Instead, they can focus their sole energy into that one format whilst helping the other in a support capacity and challenging the other. So, yeah, it's been good, and you can see kind of the start of it, and hopefully the results will back up what I'm saying here.
Well, of course, for Sussex fans, yeah, they'll be hoping, keeping the fingers crossed. But that is very, very interesting. I mean, Joe, yeah, would you be in favour of that Lanx, for example, splitting the coaching?
It depends who the coaches were, you know. I guess in modern day T20 cricket, times are moving so fast, you'd kind of need someone, in my opinion, I'd want someone who's almost just retired, or maybe you look at kind of getting like a player manager and something like that. I don't know. That's my personal opinion. To be honest, I'm fine with how things are at Lanx. So I don't think we need to change anything coaching wise, but you know, if that change ever was to get implemented, I would probably lean towards getting someone who's recently retired, and just because they're, you know, to almost keep moving with the times. And not that, I mean, you could watch a game, you could watch 10 games of T20 cricket and realize this is how the right way to play is, or generally this is the right way to play, but still it's different to actually being a player, isn't it? So yeah, I mean, it is an interesting aspect, it is an interesting interesting prospect for sure, but right now, Lanx don't need a coaching change, so we'll leave it. But it is, I mean, I guess the best thing about Sussex doing this is they're going to be guinea pigs for every county. And if Sussex end up going to win the T20 for the next 2-3 years, if you know, if you win it consecutively, then I bet you will start seeing loads of counties going to split coaches. So it's going to be interesting. It is, and also Sussex have a great side in T20, like you said, Luke. So yeah, it really is going to be interesting to see how that works out. And to be honest, similar to last year, I would put Sussex up there as one of the favourites. I really would, alongside probably Lanx, Notts as well. And I don't know who, off the top of my head, I couldn't think of another side. But I'll put probably those three sides as three of my finals day teams. Like if I had to call it really early. It's a bold call in March. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It really is.
I think going back to the split coaching as well, we saw it with Dan Vittori, didn't we? Middlesex got Dan Vittori. And I think the difference here is that having James Kirtley here for 12 months of the year, he actually working with the T20 squad and the plans, developing the plans. I think if counties did it where, I think Derby should do it with Dominic Cork as well, don't they? Where these coaches come in just for a period of time.
Just not, for the T20s. Yeah. Mm. Almost like franchise cricket in a way.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm not sure how well that works as opposed to what we're doing, which is quite different, having the coach here all the time. Because like I said with Jason Gillespie, it comes with his challenges if the coach isn't there the whole time and the coach comes in with their ideas but hasn't communicated with any of the other coaches or the support staff. So I think counties, if said, if Sussex were successful, if we were successful and we won, and we hopefully do win a couple of T20 trophies, that counties don't get the wrong idea and just bring in the gun for hire, as to speak. I reckon the benefit will be having the coach almost already within the setup, and you're almost promoting from within, like Joe suggested there.
And it will be very, very intriguing. It really will. And of course, we'll have to wait and see how things develop down on the south coast. But yeah, I mean, myself and Joe, we're going to be keeping a close eye on the Martlets this season. We really are. Because it's interesting, isn't it? It's an innovation. Because as you said, we have seen it in the past. And of course, Joe's point about franchise cricket, that's a fantastic point as well. But seeing two guys who are there all year round, 12 months a year, really being a part of that core setup, it will be interesting. It will be. And of course, we'll have to wait and see how it pans out. But myself and Joe, obviously, Luke, we wish your team the very, very best of luck. I mean, Joe, maybe not so much for the season opener. But aside from that,
yeah. The season opener and the other two times we play this season. Plus any knockout games.
Potentially another one, yeah, exactly. In the knockouts. Who knows? Who knows how the 2021 season will pan out? But yeah, we both here at the County Cricket Podcast wish Sussex the very, very best of luck heading into this season. But yeah, that's pretty much it for our main topic then. But before we wrap up today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast, mention it right at the start of the podcast. We have to mention it, guys. I'm so, so sorry. But
do we want to go there?
We have to, Joe. We have to address the 66-run loss elephant in the room. It wasn't a great batting performance, that from England, was it, in Pune? Unfortunately, for those who don't know, England won the toss, bowled first at the Maharashtra Cricket Association Stadium. India put up 317 for 5. Krunal Pandya on debut scored a fantastic 58 now. It was absolutely sensational from 31 balls. Had a really touching tribute to his late dad as well. Just incredible, incredible to watch. It really was from Krunal Pandya. And then England got off to an absolutely blistering start. Blistering. We were 135 for none in the first 14 overs. And then Jason Roy gets out for 46. And it was just like a tower of Jenga. Everything fell to absolute pieces. And yeah, England eventually bowled out for 251 runs within 43 overs. So not the greatest of starts to the series by England. But Luke, I'll start with you first for this one, mate, seeing as you're coming from an analyst point of view. What did you make of that particular performance from the Three Lions in the series opener?
Well, obviously, there were some changes in the team. Obviously, they had no Root and they had no Jofra Archer.
And Wokes
as well. So three big players for that England ODI team. And it's just interesting. They will try and play that way all the time. And that's try and get ahead of the rate and keep going. So if they feel like they can win the game in 35 overs, they'll try and do it. They call it ruthless, I think. So they try and be as ruthless as possible. And
ruthless until they lose by 66 runs.
I don't think you'll see a change, to be honest, after this, because that's how they've got to where they are, is just trying to get ahead of the rate. But it was just interesting that they capitulated in the fashion they did. I think what you're seeing kind of is a long tour, COVID situation, just almost players there that are kind of having enough. I think
burnout.
I think Moeen Ali is a big example as well, because even if you're coming in fresh, he's been on tour for 3 months. He's had COVID during the time. He's playing his second game, so obviously he's been on tour for a while, not played a lot. So I think that actually might be worse than if you're playing all the games. So you're seeing players come and get their opportunity and just be maybe a bit tired for it, really. They're burnt out, as Joe said, because they've been away for a long time. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays on the rest of the series, because if you match the teams up, they're even. England probably should have chased that, especially from the position they're in. So I just think they'll keep playing the way that they play it, because it's the brand of cricket. But I think if any more negative results come, I think it'll be from a burnout perspective, or not because of the way the team are actually playing.
Yeah. It is interesting, isn't it? The selection, shall we say, the rotation policies that England have.
Well, Joe, what do you mean the selection? Because we mentioned there about the bigger missions being Joe Root, Jofra, and Forgy injured. I mean, in fact, before I actually touch upon that, Luke, any kind of updates on that at all from a Sussex perspective? Have you guys heard anything?
I can't wait for him to turn out for Sussex against Lancs. Skittle Lines for 50.
No, well, I think Joffre's with the ECB. I don't know where he is. He's definitely not at home because he's not. Ollie Robinson's back, but Joffre's not with us at the moment. So he's either recuperating somewhere or he's with the ECB. So no, we don't know about. Well, I don't know about the situation with Joffre. Obviously, it's kind of a recurring injury with his elbow. So hopefully he can get that sorted and get back out on the park for England.
Of course, yeah. We all want a fit, firing Joffre Archer bowling 90, 95 mile an hour rockets, don't we? I think we all want that as England fans. And of course, as Sussex fans as well. You want to see that in the blast. But going back to my original question then, Joe, with regards to selection, rotation, no Chris Wokes, no Joe Root. We also had a severe lack of a number three batsman, of course. Ben Stokes coming in at number three, chosen over Liam Livingston, who, of course, you're very familiar with as a Lanx fan. Would you criticise the selection of certain, well, in fact, not the selection, the omission of certain players? Do you think that England could have maybe potentially, when the likes of Ali and Butler came back, could have provided another couple of players as replacements? What are your thoughts on the selections from Chris Silverwood in this particular game?
Yeah, I'm firstly not entirely sure why Joe Root isn't there. I don't know if he has just been rested
He is
rested, yeah. So, you know, obviously that might just be a cricket rest or rest from the bubble. So, you know, that's fair enough. He obviously would have batted three and played. I think, for me, Livingston should have played. I don't really know why Stokes batted at three. I can't remember who it was, but one of the commentators on Sky said, I think it might have been Nasser, said he's batting three because they want him to get involved. And in my opinion, that's their own, because he didn't really play any part in the T20s, apart from in the last game. And in my opinion, that's their own fault because they batted him where they batted him. But that's a whole other debate. I'm not going to get into England's number three debate again because
we had it on the last pod.
I have a very strong opinion about that as well. So yeah, in my opinion, Stokes is not a one-day number three. He's got to be batting, you know, number five. Livingston should have batted three realistically. You know, I don't think Tom Curran deserves to play anymore. Well, not in the for the remainder of the series. He's taken one wicket in his last nine ODIs. You know, if that's just not deserved, in my opinion. I think he's averaging over 200. It's crazy. You know, that he still actually get. I'm surprised he got picked. And I'm a fan of Tom Curran. I think he's a good player, but obviously the form just isn't right there. I just don't think he, in my opinion, doesn't deserve to play. So I think Rhys Topley should come into the side. I also think Rashid needs a rest because, well, also I really want Parkinson to play, so that's there kind of is. My excuse for that.
There it is. I
think Rashid's a class player. I do think he needs a rest because he has had recurring shoulder injuries. You know, so England do need to remember there is actually a World Cup at the end of the year. So they do need to kind of protect Rashid's shoulder. The last thing they want is for him to get injured. Similarly to what's happened to Shreyas, what we're talking about, him coming to Lanx. Is he going to be rusty? England do not want that with Rashid for the World Cup, arguably their best bowler. So personally, I think Parkinson should play. I think he's been mistreated by England actually throughout the whole winter because he's, you know, you don't take someone on tour for 3 or 4 months for, he just ran drinks on. You know, he's not played a game. And he bowled really well in Sri Lanka in the warm-up. Took a fourfer or a fifer in the warm-up in the way before the first test in Sri Lanka. So I think Parkinson has to play. I think it was Rob Key who said it. What's the point of taking him out there if they're not going to see what he's like in those conditions? He could have sat at home for 3 months and been playing for Lanx instead. He's or training with Lanx.
Well, instead, Jay, he's in India. Just rebut that, okay? Just to play some devil's advocate. The difference there is he's working with ECB quality coaches, international quality coaches, Jeetan Patel. He's going out there, he's learning the conditions, he's acclimatizing. So it's not the same as being sat at home in Lancashire. It's not the exact same. You're learning from one of the best county players in the last decade.
Fair enough. That example was maybe a bit far-fetched, but you get my point. I don't think it's fair on Parkinson because everyone knows, well, we don't know personally, but everyone knows players' experiences and what they've said publicly about times in bubbles, and I don't know how Parkinson's found his time in a bubble, but you know potentially he's really struggled with that. So to have been in a bubble for the last 3 months, that's not going to be easy. To probably it got to a point certainly in the tests where he knew he wasn't going to play, and then potentially got like that in the T20s where he knows he's not going to play any cricket. Sure, it's great that he's acclimatizing, but how are they ever going to see what he's like in the pressure situations against arguably the best white ball side in the world. Certainly in those conditions, they are the best white ball side in the world. With a World Cup coming up, what if Rashid does hurt his shoulder in the first game? Parkinson's the backup spinner and he's not played a game in India before. Then they're in trouble. So, look, in my opinion, it's they've messed it all up. Another thing I think is I don't really know where Chris Wilkes' future lies for England. Now, we'll pose a question to you in a minute, Aaron. I kind of mentioned it a bit before. But I personally, again, think it's pretty poor how Wilkes has been treated by England. I don't know how you two feel about that.
Obviously, I can't disagree. With that. I mean, that's the
same with Plunkett as well. Same with Plunkett.
Well, with Plunkett, it made a little bit more sense because you got to think age. Okay, ahead of the next World Cup, that did make a
you don't just cut
sense.
Cut him out. Like
no,
that.
I agree with that.
Yeah, so for me, it's been poor how Chris Wilkes has been treated. Ollie Stone's a bit different. I mean, he's played this winter and he's also had a lot of injuries, so they must, I would assume, try to protect his body a bit as well. And also, he can get game time at Warwickshire as well. But Chris Wilkes, for me, just doesn't make sense. And I honestly don't know if he has an England future anymore, certainly in white ball cricket, because they just seem to pick players ahead of him. He's not even made the tour. And you can't use the excuse of he's rested for this. They can't use that excuse because he's not played. And he's actually not been in that as many bubbles either. And obviously, we don't know, you know, Chris's personal situation. But just off the face of things, that's, you know, how I view it. So I will now pose a question to you, Aaron. It is going back to County. And Luke, you will no doubt have an opinion on this as well. Let's say Chris Wilkes was cut out from England's white ball setup and he was available to play for Warwickshire in the T20 Blast. Would you like to see him either open the batting or bat at number three? Because he's a class player. Is that something you would like to see?
No chance. No.
Where would you like
to bat?
Not in the
T20. Number three, got Sam Hain. And opening the batting, we've got loads of options. We've got Ed Pollock, Rob Yates, got Adam Hose.
Chris Wilkes is class.
He is, but...
Remember, he's batted three for England in a World Cup match.
In one game against the West Indies.
And he did well. West Indies have a quality
200
attack.
Something.
I'm just throwing that out there. I don't have an opinion on it.
In
I couldn't care less.
In the Cup, again, it wouldn't really work because we've got Sam Hain and his 59.78 career list day average in there.
Well then open with Wilkes.
But why?
I'm just throwing that. I told you, I don't have an opinion on it.
I know.
It's neither here nor there. It's just merely a question I thought might make for an interesting discussion, which it clearly is.
Well, maybe. Maybe, let's say Sam Hain was injured, potentially. Or let's say that England, let's say that Warwickshire, for example, wanted to get someone in there just to score some quick fire runs, almost like a pinch hitter. Fair enough, Chris Wilkes is good enough, but I don't see Mark Robinson doing that. I really don't. I don't see Robbo doing that this season. But with regards to the whole England conversation, I think that's where the deep dive is needed. Because the way in which he's been treated over the winter is quite shocking. Okay, because when you look at Chris Wilkes, when you look at his records, not just at home, but away as well, I know there's a lot of discussion and discourse about his effectiveness overseas in Australia and the subcontinent, but he hardly ever puts a foot wrong for England, ever. Okay, you think back, 2011 debut, took a six for against Australia and Sydney. 2016,
he's
scored
class.
95 now against Sri Lanka, and yet everyone remembers the Liam Plunkett six, don't they, from that particular game at Trent Bridge. Think of the World Cup, England's second leading wicket taker behind Jofra Archer.
He's 100 against India. 100
against India at Lords, yeah. Wilkes, he scored a century at Lords, as the Barmy Army song goes. And then, of course, last season as well, 2020, in Biosecure Bubble Cricket, scored that incredible match-winning knock against Pakistan at Old Trafford. Yeah. So for me, I don't understand. I don't understand why there wasn't this clarity with Chris Wilkes.
That's what England missed.
Before the
Sri
Lanka tour as well, because let's face it, we've known about this for months, since about December, about Biosecure Bubbles, the rest and rotation policy. We've known about this for months now. It's March. Why wasn't there a discussion with Chris Wilkes to say, right, Wilkesy, you're not going to go to Sri Lanka. We're going to save you for India. You're probably not going to play in the tests because you're below Sam Curran. We've got Ollie Stone over there. You've got Craig Overton as well. Ollie Robb from Sussex, of course, over there as one of the reserves. You're not going to play, so come to India, come for the ODIs, and that will be your winter. And instead, he's gone to Sri Lanka, not played a single minute of cricket. He's gone to India, not played a single minute of cricket. And then in the series where he's most likely to play, he hasn't been selected. He's now at home, he's training in the nets with Carlos Brathwaite down at Warwickshire. So for me personally, I'm baffled. And he would have been a brilliant, brilliant option with the new ball for England. So Luke, what's your particular thoughts on the whole Chris Wilkes situation? Do you wish that England would have handled things differently? What are your thoughts?
Well, you look at England and they go for almost a horses for courses selection policy, right? So they obviously identified the attack in India, Anderson, Archer, Sam Curran, like the all-rounder, and then obviously they were going to go two spinners. And the only time they didn't go with that attack was when they thought it was going to swing around corners with the pink ball, which obviously didn't go well. But I feel like Wokes was taken on these tours as a quality replacement for Iv. You see him kind of as the replacement, I reckon, for someone like Anderson. If Anderson went down in the tour and then they already have someone there, because let's be honest, Anderson's fitness wasn't promised to us. He could have gone at any time. Thankfully, he got through the tours, which was great. And then for the ODI situation, I really think that, I don't know the isolation situation, but you'd have thought in the condensed period that the T20s were in, if Wokes had left, because obviously he wasn't here for the T20s, and then come back, isolation period probably would have not on either back arrival in England or back in arrival in India. So either, and it might be financial, either the ECB didn't want to pay for another hotel room to keep Chris Wokes for the whole time. So they sent him back and said, right, that's you done. You've been back up for the whole time. And it could purely be something like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that, because you're going to keep Chris Wokes around. You don't really, like, he hasn't played a T20 for England for a long time. Are they going to keep him around to do nothing, like literally nothing in that T20 period?
He would have gotten the ODI squad. Yeah, like, in my opinion, he would have played in this ODI, in these ODIs.
Well, I think purely for just keeping him there for that T20 block. It was organised terribly. What they probably should have done was gone tests, ODIs, T20s, because really think the isolation period would have played a big part in it, because it was too much of a mess to send him home for the tests and then back. So you would have looked at him being on tour for the whole period of time, which obviously wouldn't have been ideal for him, like mentally, physically, whatever. So that's the only... And on the outside, it's really frustrating, but I'm just trying to apply my rational mind with my fans' mind, because I'm like you, it's frustrating that he's been bought the whole time, hasn't played, because I agree with you, he's a quality player. I'm just trying to think of cricket...
Devil's advocate, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think with cricket logistics and think he would have been there as a player who's played test matches, like big test match experience, if one of the big guns in Anderson and Broad went down. And I think overseas, that's realistically his role. In England, I would love to see him back in, because he's been quality. Like, he's a momentum breaker. He kind of drags his teams out of the dirt, you know, almost. He's like a boring version of Stokes, in my opinion, isn't he? Like, Stokes is real exciting, but Wokes, you know, gets the job done as equally as well, better with the ball, I'd say, as well, than obviously Stokes with the bat. And then, that's the only way I can describe it to you guys, is that's what happened.
Well, no, that's fair enough, Luke. And of course, we don't know. We are looking from an outsider's perspective in. Okay, and of course, there will be these discussions. There'll be a lot of talk after the series as well. Let's face it, if England lose the ODI series, there's going to be a lot of discussions in terms of rotations, selections, all this, that, the other. And it is just a discussion at the end of the day. It's not a rant. It's not ranting and raving and moaning about it, but it is just a debate. And of course, I suppose we'll have to touch upon that once the series does finish. And fingers crossed, England can finish in a bit more of a finer fashion, as opposed to the series opener. But I think that's a good place to end today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast with a nice discussion about Christopher Roger Wokes. So, Luke, before we end today's podcast, do you have anything to kind of plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example?
Obviously, my Twitter and Instagram, if you want to follow me, I'm LWJ Dunning. Mainly for some rubbish cricket analytics, but also...
It's not rubbish, come on. It's good, I've read it myself.
Also, if you want to see me tweet about Arsenal, big Arsenal fan, so stuff like that.
Good choice.
If you're an Arsenal fan, feel free to follow me, but also I'll be dropping articles as and when with the Caribbean Cricket Podcast, also with Pace Journal, and that's Tamal Mills' kind of little project on the side with Shabazz Chowdhury, so plug them as well. And if you want to see more of that stuff, then follow me and you'll see that.
Well, yeah, of course, Luke. And we will leave the links to those in the description below in the podcast. So, yeah, if you want to go and follow Luke, I thoroughly recommend your analysis. Do go and give him a follow on Twitter and Insta. But I mean, that pretty much brings us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. Just from us two, Luke, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a very interesting and insightful conversation. So, yeah, and of course, good luck for Sussex heading into the season and with your analysis for the Martlets in 2021. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. For all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.